Hello and welcome back to the Tasty Debrief. This week we are talking about British director Edgar Wright and our talent showcase.
So obviously Edgar Wright has a very big corpus of works that he's put out, but we do not have time to go through all of them. So we've picked five of his biggest and most interesting films to look at, which includes Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz and The World's End. We're also looking at Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and Baby Driver, with a little bit of an honourable mention in there to Spaced as well. So jumping straight in with his early career, Spaced ran from 1999 to 2001, and it was the beginning of his work with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
So I think a really interesting thing to note is Edgar Wright, for much of the first series of Spaced at least, was the editor. So he was the person on set going, please do as I say. And then also the person who's taking it into post. And I think that's where his understanding of post started, really came from, was that he was like, oh, I'm taking it into post, so I know that if we record this shot, and then I can immediately transition it into this shot. When people talk about Edgar Wright, they never don't mention his style, which is always, you know, these transitioning cuts, these rapid montages, and being a working editor for a while, I think really instilled that mindset into him.
So the first of the films that we're going to look at chronologically was Shaun of the Dead. It was actually written by Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg together, as was all of their Cornetto trilogy. And I think it's just a masterclass in sort of dark British comedy.
Shaun of the Dead, obviously the entire thing is a comedy, but it is pastiching, referencing and subverting the expectations of traditional horror and
Edgar Wright playing with genre is very true, specifically of the Cornetto trilogy. When you look at the three of them together, Shaun of the Dead is a parody of a zombie film, basically. Hot Fuzz is, again, it's a parody, but of a sort of American cop film. And then, obviously, you've got World's End, which is a sort of sci-fi parody again. He's very clever in the way that he takes an established genre where the audience knows all the tropes and kind of knows what to expect. And then he plays with it and he messes around with it and he sort of flips it all on its head so that it's new and interesting to us while still fitting within something that we recognise.
I think you touched on a really important point from Edgar Wright, which is that he doesn't treat the audience like idiots. And Edgar Wright is aware that you as an audience member knows the rules of film. You've grown up with film. And therefore, when he makes parodies of it or he plays on the usual tropes, it's really interesting to watch.
That sort of also carries on his use of Chekhov's gun, a literal gun in Shaun of the Dead's case, is really good. A lot of filmmakers, I think, would chicken out and have, oh, you hear in the background them remembering it or they show the scene again. And it's like, no, it expects you to remember it. And that happens all the time. There's so many callbacks, repurposed dialogue, which is something that happens in almost all of his films, that a line that's said at the beginning of the film comes back at the end with completely different meaning.
I definitely think that with Shaun of the Dead as well, this is where we start to see Edgar Wright's very distinct visual style coming through. It's where we get the beginnings of all of his montage sequences, especially with, like, we'll head to the Winchester and wait for the saw to blow over. It's also where we start to see some running gags that come through the whole Cornetto trilogy, which I really enjoy seeing them recur in different ways, particularly the jumping over and or through the fence. But this is definitely where we start to see those kind of very distinct elements of his comedy and of the visuals that he aims for. It's also where we see a lot of character-driven action, particularly in the films that are very British, like the Cornetto trilogy. A lot of what happens is driven by the character and their emotions, rather than in something like Scott Pilgrim, which we'll get to later on, where that's a more American sort of Canadian story and the action is very much more driven by the action.
That moves on quite nicely because Edgar Wright is clearly a filmmaker who works with every single element of production and takes it into account. One of the few directors I can think of who actually thinks about sound design when creating a sequence. That's where they have so many LNJ cuts, which is where a sound comes in before or continues after the visuals have ended. And it's just really nice to see that. One of my favourite examples of sound in this is where they're in the Winchester and you have all the zombies coming out and it's just this constant moaning. And then after Shaun shoots his mother, all of the sound drops out and it just really helps to create that emotional moment.
One of my favourite moments of sound in Shaun the Dead is when they're hiding in the Winchester and John, the guy that owns the pub, comes out and they beat him to the beat of Queen because someone ran into the jukebox. That's thought about and planned and it's very how Edgar Wright would move forward from Shaun of the Dead.
But action to the beat of the music is obviously something that he expands much more in his future works.
So the next in line is Hot Fuzz. Again, written by Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright together.
I love that it's very much, you can see the style set up in Shaun of the Dead, given a wee bit more budget, so there's much more kind of lavishness to it. There's the town that they're in feels very, like, real, especially with the way the characters talk about it. Really helps. And you've got some even better repurposed dialogue in this one. It's great. Like, every introduction of every villager comes back at the end during the action sequence.
I also feel like this is when Edgar Wright moved from being an indie director into a big boy director.
As well, Hot Fuzz very much expands that kind of Britishness vibe. So Shaun of the Dead is obviously taking place in London, so that's got a very different feel to it. But the next two films in the trilogy are small town Britain. Hot Fuzz kind of establishes that angst of growing up in a small town where nothing ever happens and focusing on these ridiculous little things that don't matter. And that is one of the kind of very strong thematic through lines of the whole trilogy. And it's kind of, Hot Fuzz is where they, I think, understand that and then make it much more of a present thing. You obviously got ridiculous British things like the swan, the fact that the police are, you know, going after that. Most of the scenes taking place in a bar or in a very small police station that has one cell. And just the representation of the British bobbies is fantastic. Because one of the things Edgar Wright said in an interview that part of the reason he wanted to make Hot Fuzz was to take British film away from the traditional British gangster film and give it back to the bobbies.
I do definitely really like that element of Hot Fuzz. Like I said, it's my favourite of the trilogy, and it's my favourite because it does such a great job of satirising the sort of cop film subgenre that basically only really has one story, in that a sort of small town cop is trying to, like, he's stumbled onto a big crime that he has to fix, and then he has to, like, go and prove himself and also, like, save the nation from a threat. Edgar Wright has sort of taken that storyline, and rather than just making it a spoof, like a lot of people would, he's just sort of downsized everything and Britishized it. And it's really fun to see. So instead of the big, like, international crime threat, now it's the village elders in this teeny-weeny village in Gloucestershire. And he really mocks the overdramatic tropes of the genre as well, especially with stuff like Nick Frost's character desperate to have his sort of Keanu Reeves Point Break moment, which he does actually get, which I think is really, really cool. But it's just very clear that he's thought a lot in depth about how to sort of subvert what we expect from that genre and make it new and interesting and different. And I really like that he doesn't shy away from making it, like, really, really British too. Like, the whole thing is set in Sandford. And in terms of characters, you've got Olivia Colman's Constable Thatcher, who's just, like, adorable and West Country and a little bit thick. And then you've got Bill Bailey as the Brothers Turner, which I think is really fantastic. And then PC Bob Walker, who's so West Country he's unintelligible. I don't remember any other film where a person has been sort of that much of a niche character, but still funny and still really effective in that sort of group dynamic as well, which I think is really cool. And then you've got, like, British situations as well, like the swan that you said, and the underage drinking in the pub. And the whole sort of outline of the plot is this Village of the Year competition, whereas in something like an American cop film, that would be, you know, terrorists trying to take over New York.
As well, this one also has Wright playing with some genre. It's one of the best for it, because the entire film is a comedy that's pastiching police dramas, and all of the murder sequences are filmed like horrors. You know, it's three genres wrapped up into one, and it's pulled off seamlessly. Like, there's never a point where it's jarring. Everything comes off incredibly genuine. Clear that Wright understands these genres. Dude loves film and is a massive film nerd, and that comes across in his work.
So the last of the trilogy, World's End. A lot of people say it's the worst of the three. I don't think I'd go that far. I don't think any of them are particularly bad. I really like World's End. There's a lot of sort of subtleties to it that I really enjoyed. But what do we all think of it?
I really do like World's End. But it's really good. It doesn't deserve as much hate as it gets, considering another film in this list.
It's the least comedic of the three, and I think that's why it gets a lot of its attention. Or the least sort of overtly comedic.
I think the reason that the people, that the audiences sort of find this the least funny of the three is because it strikes a little bit too close to home for sort of a majority of a British audience. that's what the main character, Gary King, is experiencing, is that he's got to come back to this small town without having really accomplished anything with his life. It's a little bit too much of, like, a genuine concern. I think a lot of people watch it with, like, a little voice in the back of their head being like, well, I could end up like Gary King. And I think that's why people don't find it as funny, is because no one really thinks that there's a threat of a zombie apocalypse, but the threat of sort of not really becoming anything special is a genuine one, and I think that's why people don't really... I think everyone just backs off from it a little bit, because it's...
The entire town in World's End is very real. I mean, it's just well in Garden City. You would never get in an American film the level of disgust on somebody asking for a pint of water when they're in a bar. That just wouldn't happen. And as well, you've got very real fears. They even say it quite explicitly of, oh, Starbucket, you know, an initiative to rob small pubs of any discernible character. That's again kind of tying into that real fear of coming back home and everything is different and corporatized. Especially for a generation, that's a big thing.
That is one of the big themes of the film as well, especially when you then consider like the Blanks and everything that they stand for as well. There's a reason why in everybody in that village in the film, they all drive the same car. Varying colours, but they all drive the same car, and it's an electric car, as a sort of nod to the fact that they're all... It's subtle elements like that that all the way through the film reinforce the idea that the main fear of Gary King is becoming a person with no character in a place with no character. His main concern is that he'll come back to his village where everything is now just dull and lifeless and eventually become one of the dull, lifeless people that lives there. So we've discussed the very British side of the films that we're looking at. So let's move on to Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which actually came out sort of in the middle of the Quartetto trilogy. I think it came out between Hot Fuzz and World's End. But this is the only one of Edgar Wright's films that we're looking at that is not solely his sort of creation. This is based on Brian Lee O'Malley's comic books. So this is Edgar Wright taking somebody else's characters and somebody else's plot and trying to make it his own. And I think you can definitely see a difference in the films, because he wasn't sort of given the same amount of space to sort of play to his strengths as he was with the films that he wrote with Simon Pegg.
So it's still clearly an Edgar Wright film. You know, his montage style is all over it, full of Ellen J. Kurtz, there's lots of repurposed dialogue. Fundamentally, its characterization as well isn't an Edgar Wright script. The protagonists in the Cornetto trilogy were always had elements of unlikability, but Scott is kind of irredeemable. He does a lot of very unpleasant things throughout the film. He ghosts a girl. He starts off and he's, you know, dating a high schooler who I don't really think is mature enough to properly deal with something like that. He cheats on that high school girl.
I definitely agree with you there. I have a lot of issues with characters in this film. I think that they are all unapologetically characterised. It makes it too difficult to engage with them. When you look at Scott, he's pathetic. He's a pushover for most of the film, and he's got this weedy little voice, and he's too childish to be funny most of the time. So instead you're just kind of a little bit sort of sad for him. And then Ramona is completely unfeeling. She's unsympathetic to everything that Scott has to go through for the majority of the film. And then Gideon Graves as a villain is just massively disappointing. He's sort of a caricature, a poorly done caricature of a character like sort of Andrew Scott's Moriarty. Like when you look at Moriarty, he can be sing-song and he can be immature and he can dance around to classical music while he's stealing the crown jewels. But then on the flip of a coin, in like half a second, he can then switch to murdering a blind old lady because she started to describe what he sounded like. He's scary still. He has his funny moments, like blowing raspberries at imaginary texts floating out of his phone, but he's still genuinely a scary villain. But Gideon Graves kind of misses that mark. The only time he's really supposed to be scary is when he kills Scott, but it's treated very casually, and we're sort of taken away from looking at him as a villain because we see 5 different reaction shots all at once, and none of them are him, and then we cut away from it very quickly and Scott's alive again, so it doesn't really matter anyway. Because now Scott is infallible, so it doesn't, like, the one scary thing that Gideon Graves can do is pointless. And I think it's just a bit disappointing that, like, we don't even get the pleasure of disliking the bad guy character for his evil. We just kind of dislike him because he's, like, a petulant child and he's more annoying than anything else.
Like, it doesn't help either, looking at this film. It's unapologetically Canadian, which, for a British director, isn't ideal. The way humour is used and the way, kind of... And it's quite evident within the film. Like, Michael Cera and Edgar Wright aren't a normal fit together.
I'm not a massive fan of Michael Cera as an actor anyway, because Michael Cera already is known for playing a lot of sort of weedy, pathetic, dislikable characters. It really detracts from the film as a whole.
We talked about Wright and genre. The fact that he fully embraces the comic book genre, you know, comic book panels, really cool stuff like when Scott breaks up with knives, the background drops out. Obviously, you've got the direct stuff with the whooshes, bangs, the onomatopoeia happening on that. I do think that the actual video game stuff kind of clashes. I haven't read the comics, so I don't know about that. But at least in the film, it doesn't quite work. The fact that they've tried to combine this video game overlay stuff with the comic book stuff, it's quite distracting. The comics are already comics. They don't need to have... The fact that they're using comic book terminology is fine. I think the film should have picked one or the other. The fact that they have both, they doesn't really work.
I definitely agree with you that the CG in the film is an issue. The main problem I have with it is the fact that it's not established whether or not it's something that the characters are all supposed to engage with or not. Obviously, there's moments like when Scott pulls the sword out of his chest that they are definitely all seeing it and they're definitely all engaging with it. But then there's also points where it'll be like only Scott that sees the video game graphic, or the graphic will come up but no characters will react to it. And it kind of makes the audience question, like, okay, so is it something that only we as an audience can see, or is it the characters can all see it, but they're ignoring it, or is nobody supposed to be registering it? Like, is it just there for style? It just makes it a little bit difficult to engage with it, because every time that kind of graphic shows up, every time there's, like, a comic book panel or, like, a video game score comes up or anything like that, you're reminded of the question of, like, whether or not the characters can see it or if this is extra information that you're being given.
Trying to be over-ambitious isn't... You know, it's quite commendable, but it just doesn't work. I had one last point as well. Fight scenes in this are great. You know, they're greatly choreographed, they look stunning, there's some great shots, there's really creative visual stuff going on, each one's incredibly different. So the film's kind of worth a watch for those, but everything between sort of doesn't work.
Do you know what would have made the fight scenes better? A good soundtrack. Edgar Wright films are all about the music. We've talked about it in Shaun of the Dead. We've got a solid score in Hot Fuzz, and World's End has a fantastic soundtrack. Scott Pilgrim, considering it's a film which has a music competition, it has a band featuring in it, it's got a really forgettable soundtrack and a really dull score. And I don't know why that is. Every single Edgar Wright film is iconic when it comes to music. Even looking at his film after this, that again has a sublime soundtrack. You've got his work through music videos where he's able to implement music into the videos themselves to just an amazing degree. Yeah, he just seems to falter a little bit in Scott Pilgrim, and I don't know why, because it's like everything was there for it to work, and then it didn't.
So, from his film with possibly the worst use of music of the five that we're looking at, onto the film with, I would argue, the best, Baby Driver has a spectacular soundtrack attached to it.
Also, I think the film that incorporates that music the best. The entire thing is shot like a music video, to the point where music was so integral to this story that the script came with a USB stick that contained the entire soundtrack.
I do definitely think that you can tell that this film was written with the soundtrack in mind. It's another sort of example of the way that Edgar Wright works, and that he considers every element of the production process all the way through. The fact that when these scripts were sent out for Baby Driver, they were sent out with MP3 players with all of the soundtrack songs on them. It's very clear that he was considering the music all the way through. And Baby Driver was like his passion project for a long time. The Blue Song music video that he did was essentially a proof of concept for this, and you can tell that it's music in films is really, really important to him, especially with like everything that came before it, like with the exception of Scott Pilgrim being a bit of a weird one. But the music in Shaun of the Dead, you can tell that he considered it very closely. The amount of songs and artists that relate to sort of the apocalypse or zombies or monsters in general is really, really funny, I think. I love the fact that Ghost Town, Panic and Zombie are all songs in the soundtrack of the film. And you've got artists like iMonster and Zombie Nation and Goblin in there, which I think is really very sort of smartly done, because even people that like don't really engage with the zombie film element of it, like music nerds still have something to look at as well. And I think it's very clear that music is important to him in other ways as well. Like you can see in the record throwing scene from Shaun of the Dead, like Sean's defense of some of the more questionable music that he still enjoys, and like the Sade reference and all that kind of stuff. I think it's really, really very clear how much Edgar Wright cares about the music and its significance in his films.
So outside of just music, the sound design of the film is excellent. Baby has tinnitus. The entire film is putting the audience in the kind of reality of somebody with that problem. The actual whine and drone in the film is always there. Obviously, there's certain scenes like the chase scene where he loses his iPod that is much more prevalent, but that's only there because suddenly he doesn't have access to his music. The actual drone is there throughout every scene, but it's normally subtle enough you can't hear it because of the music. You become as reliant on that soundtrack to almost enjoy the viewing experience as Baby does.
I really think it's very interesting the way that Baby as a character was constructed to depend almost entirely on music as well. It's interesting to see a representation of a hearing disabled person anyway. It's not a thing that you see very often in film because it's very hard to visualize. But the fact that he literally depends on music to function, like in the scene in the car chase where he can't do it, so he has to like skip back in a song to find the right bit and then he can pull away perfectly. Like that relationship between character and music is not something I've ever seen before. It's a very effective tool for like building tension in moments where Baby is deprived of it, because we also stress out, like we're like put on edge by the fact that we don't have the music to sort of guide us through the narrative as it has been doing like the whole film.
The casting of Baby Driver is just great because of the likes of Jamie Foxx as Bat, who is just insane. John Hamm is, in my opinion, the standout performance.
But they are so engaging. Like everyone is terrified of bats because he is insane and unpredictable, and everyone feels the sort of the betrayal and the growing dislike for Doc as he moves through the narrative and he keeps screwing Baby over, and everyone is on Baby's side from the beginning. You know, we all want him to get away with the girl, we all want him to get out of the life that he doesn't want to lead anymore, and I think like that characterization, especially with the spectacular casting choices that were made, makes this film really, really effective. I really enjoyed the acting in this film. There was never a point where I looked at it and was like, it's Ansel Elgort or it's Kevin Spacey. Like, these are big name actors, but I never looked at them and saw anything other than the character, which I think is an issue with a lot of big actors, is that you end up looking at them and seeing them as an actor rather than the characters that they're playing.
Best films for genre, or Bright Loves is genre subversion. The entire film, from the first few shots, is a heist film. You know that straight away. They really do fully commit to that bit. And as well, they've brought in a lot of 50s and 60s style Americana imagery, because a lot of like the most famous heist films are very much of that era. So kind of bringing that in while still clearly being a modern film is really nice to see. Especially stuff with like the ending shot where it's all black and white and he's leaning against the car and she's in like the little sort of polka dotted dress. One of the main locations is a diner. It's very clear that Wright's got a certain love of that particular aesthetic.
It's another of his sort of style elements that comes through in sort of the majority of his films, is making regular callbacks to other sort of significant films from the genres that he's playing around with. That's why in Hot Fuzz you have the Point Break moment. It's why in Shaun of the Dead you have references to other popular zombie films, you know. And I think he does it very, very effectively. It's never like an in-your-face sort of, oh, look at us, we're referencing this film. It's always just subtle enough that like anyone who gets it gets that extra little chuckle, but it still fits the narrative if you don't get the reference.
I feel like Edgar Wright's really able to play homage to all of these films very well. Unlike, because a lot of directors do this, they will be inspired by certain films and then steal a scene from it. Tarantino, big name who does it. Edgar Wright does it to some extent, but in a really respectful way. They're homages, and he's trying to let the audience know how much he loves these films because he's included them in his work. And if you've seen his work, you may enjoy these films as well. Because, God, he's a huge film geek.
So Wright's style as well really fits with the action sequences. Obviously, those fast-driving sequences, that fantastic montage element works really well. We bring up, you know, right from his very first feature film, well, his very second feature film, Shaun of the Dead, with the scene where they're all whacking a zombie with In Time to Don't Stop Me Now by Queen. That has now come full circle, and it's really fully embraced in Baby Driver. You know, the entire film fits that style, whereas before it was used in, like, for segments and chunks. You know, for the action sequences, a song would come on, or for a kind of montage sequence, it would come on and then settle down, and we wouldn't have it for a while. But Baby Driver, it never settles. It's there throughout the film, and it works really well.
I have to admit, my particular favourite of these scenes is the tequila scene.
It's fantastically done. The whole thing, I think that's one of the most exemplary ones, because the tequila song is so, like, has such a nice steady beat to it that you can kind of get it. And the fact that all the gunshots are timed with it, really, really well done. Stunningly edited film.
And in contrasting fashion with action sequences, you have his ability to make the mundane exciting and interesting. His use of montage to get us from place to place, instead of being boring and using B-roll to just make sure the audience know where we are, he uses really interesting cuts and really interesting imagery throughout a scene. So going back to Hot Fuzz, you have Sergeant Angel going from London to Sandford. You see the Peace Lily's journey from London to Sandford, which in itself, when you say it out loud, is hilarious. You see his signal dropping as he goes further and further away from society, and you just see his changing life as he moves away from the hectic city into Sandford. And Edgar Wright has done this through all his films.
It is definitely something that you see in Shaun of the Dead as well, that iconic scene where he walks to and from the shops. Because you see it twice, and both times it's really sort of monotonous and repetitive, intentionally so. The scene is shot exactly the same way both times. But the background changes, and there's little elements that make it exciting, like the boy with the football is suddenly a zombie boy without a football. And there's all these little things that change, and it's more exciting to us because Sean has no idea. He doesn't register any of it because he's a bit hungover. But it's really interesting to watch because it's a very clever way of establishing the new norm of there being zombies without having that sort of horror film moment where, like, they open the blinds and there's a zombie at the door and that's the first thing that they realise is wrong. It's a very clever way of showing it, I think.
For lack of a better word, I feel like these scenes are kinetic and interesting, which for a lot of directors is really hard to capture.
So he's one of the directors with the most kind of stylistic, thematic through line. You know, a director who takes into account every aspect of the filmmaking process. And I think he's one of the directors people always think of when they go, oh, that's a director with a distinctive style.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that you're watching an Edgar Wright film when you are watching one. Like, the visual style, the pop culture references, the importance of music, and the editing montage sequences, they're all sort of big flags that are like, this is an Edgar Wright film. And the fact that they carry through all of his work means that he spends a lot of time thinking about the majority of the films that he's made. And I think that is the mark of a spectacular director.
So I think that's all we have time for today. What do you think of this episode? Do you have any points you'd like to make with us? Don't forget that Anchor has the ability to leave a voice message. If you want to talk to us directly, we can play it out and answer you directly on here. Join us next Friday, where we will be talking about Game of Thrones Episode 2. Or next Monday, where we will be delving into the 1986 cult classic Labyrinth. If you want to keep up with us, why not check out our Twitter @the_tasty. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again soon.